When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist. And I was just at the Ann Arbor Comics Artist Forum this past Sunday, which is a free monthly event we put on in Ann Arbor, Michigan at the Ann Arbor District Library. You've heard me talk about this before, no doubt, where it's a two-hour get-together where cartoonists of all stripes, whether you are just starting out or if you've been doing this for a while, can get together and draw and schmooze and hobnob and talk shop. And we have a guest presenter there leading some kind of comics presentation for half hour to an hour at the top of it. And I posted some photos on Instagram, on my Twitter feed, Jersey on the Twitters. I ran into a little friend of mine named Natalia, who you may have heard on the Kids Read Comics podcast, an irregularly updating podcast that we do at kidsreadcomics.org. She was part of the Kids Make Comics panel discussion at the KRC extravaganza we did last month. And very talented young girl, 8 years old, made dozens of comics already. Super, super smart kid. She's actually almost frightening how intelligent she is. And so she was happy to see me. I was happy to see her. We were just sitting around drawing together, and she decided that she wanted to get into a competition of drawing Pokemon characters. She would pick a Pokemon character, and she would draw it, and I would draw it, and we would compete to see who won. And it was, I mean, as an anecdote, it was really sweet because there were some rounds where she said, "Oh, you clearly won," and then I was trying to be the encouraging and supportive teacher figure, saying, "I don't know, I think yours is pretty good." And she looked at me and she said very calmly, "said It's okay." I just thought, what a tremendous amount of self-esteem this kid has, and I think that's part of what makes her so amazing as a young cartoonist. She wasn't interested in being glad handled. She really was looking at it as a competition, and she didn't care if she lost as long as the drawings were good. So amazing kid. But how did we look up the Pokemon characters? This is going to lead into my larger point about getting comics to kids, because I'm thinking really hard about this. So I don't know every Pokemon character. There's over 600 of them, and I don't stay on top of this intellectual property the way I do other cartoon series. So when she would start naming these different characters, I'm like, well, I don't know what that character looks like. So she takes my iPhone out of my hands and just starts tapping away at it to find the online Pokemon Index Bulbapedia and starts looking them up. And this is an 8-year-old kid. She doesn't have an iPod Touch. She doesn't have a Mac at home. She doesn't have an iPad. But I was watching this kid very intuitively and naturally interact with my iPhone, and there was no confusion on her part about how to use iOS. And now you've heard, I'm sure, those of you who pay attention to tech podcasts, that this is a common anecdote that people say kids and grandparents can just interact with this operating system and use it without any kind of struggle or confusion. And this isn't going to be some kind of Apple fanboy thing, because I'm sure Android is the same way, because a lot of these people who are developing these tablet OSs and mobile OSs are thinking really hard about this kind of interface. And this was on a recent Spark podcast, as a matter of fact, about 2 or 3 episodes ago. They were talking about the whole struggle between should the operating system disappear, should the interface that we use become invisible and just let us interact with the content, or should we be aware of what's going on the computer? Check out Spark, the Spark CBC podcast. I want to thank again an art historian who will remain nameless for pointing me at it. And I've been meaning to email you about this because, gosh almighty, it's an incredible podcast that always turns my brain on. And I thank you very much for making me aware of this show. But anyway, so as I'm watching this kid interact with this iPhone this way and just getting what she wanted when she wanted it that way, it made me realize, and this is another thing to build my point. So I teach a lot of kids ranging from ages 7 to 17. And I talk to kids below the age of 13, and they really don't read webcomics. They're not getting comics content that way, even though they want comics a lot. They want to read comics. They love comics, but they just don't. It doesn't occur to them to go searching for webcomics online. These kids don't sit in front of a browser to get their content. How do they get their content? A lot of these kids, now Natalia notwithstanding, most of these kids, 12 and under, have iPod touches, amazingly enough. As a grown man who knows how much these things cost, it surprises me to see so many little kids with these devices, but there they are. And these kids are getting a lot of content from YouTube, getting recommendations from friends, you know, sites with funny cartoons on it and stuff. But they're not going to browsers as much. They're going to apps and YouTube to get their content. But then once they get hit about 16, 17, they start becoming aware of webcomics, I've noticed. And I've got a theory on this, but it's a theory. I have no proof to back this up. I think that because once you're 16, 17, you start posting things to DeviantArt, to Facebook, to social networking sites, Tumblr, and you're discovering webcomics that way. Hyperbole and a Half is a webcomic that a lot of my teen students are aware of. Why? Because they got pointed at it by their friends through a Tumblr log or through Facebook, and now they become fans that way. But I think once you become a more serious practitioner is when you start getting into webcomics. Now, this raises the whole problem of webcomics is that it seems sometimes, again, no proof, but this is just a general gut reaction, is that, gosh, the only people who are reading webcomics are people who are practitioners in some form or another, whether they are a beginner or whether they are professional or whether they are a freelance illustrator. It's all people who are involved in the industry somehow are reading webcomics. There's a couple stellar examples of breakout cases where non-practitioners read them, but it seems to me that that's a rare instance. Comparatively rare. And then it comes back to this whole idea of kids. How do they get their content? Now, this is very interesting to me, obviously, as somebody who wants to make more comics for kids. And one of the goals that I want to set for myself for the remainder of the year, I have two big goals in mind for my year. One is to get my teaching work I've talked about this in past Thunder Punch Dailies, I'm pretty sure. To keep the momentum going with my teaching work. I'm doing more teaching now than I've ever done before. I've talked about this. My teaching work is doing really well for me, and I'm getting invited to do all these big assembly events and public speaking gigs, and that's really cool. I'm really excited about it, and I want to invest in that to make sure that it doesn't vanish on me. The other thing I want to do, if the teaching work continues to go the way it's going, I don't have to do as much freelance work, which is great, which means I'll have more time to work on my comics, my personal comics, the comics I'm excited about. And what am I excited about? Making comics that are exciting to, you know, ages 8 to, say, 15, somewhere in the neighborhood, young people. But the problem comes in, and this is what happened with Sugary Cereals, is it's a webcomic. Kids don't go looking for webcomics until they're too old to enjoy what Sugary Cereals is about. Maybe a small percentage of those kids will enjoy it. Those who are still young at heart, like how I was when I was 17, and I still enjoyed Transformers. But for the most part, they're looking for edgier stuff because they're getting to that age where they want to discover stuff that's a little older than them. So how do you get these comics to kids? Well, there I was. Watching this 8-year-old girl interact with my iPhone and realizing that these tablet devices and mobile devices, they really are the future, not just of all media, but particularly getting comics put in front of young people. If you are a cartoonist like me who wants more young people to read your comics, I'm beginning to suspect that the way to do it is to make it easily accessible from a mobile device. Now, there is the illustrated section. I've got comics on there. It's theillustratedsection.com. And it's terrific because now you can download comics to your iPad and read them that way. And that is a destination site in that way. And I think that's a good start. But I'm coming back to this idea of apps. And I know that HTML5 is going to change a lot in terms of apps. There's a major problem with apps. I'm going to go against some things that I said in the big iPad episode, going on a little over a year ago now, where Mark and I talked extensively about what the future of comics could be in the face of this new tablet device. But there are problems with an app. It takes up real estate on your device. There's only so many pages you can have of apps on your iPad device. And as somebody who has over 100 apps on his iPhone, it becomes problematic to have dedicated apps for each and every comic that I love. Aggregation seems to be an advantage in that respect. But on the other hand, creating an app that a kid can just launch and just get new content from without having to open up Safari, without having to go through sidebars and header files, just launch the comic. There's a Thunder Punch Daily I did not too long ago. I'll link to it in the show notes because I don't remember the number offhand. But I mean, if you're listening to this, you're probably listening to it off the website. You can click the link right there. There was an episode I did a while back about formatting my Jared Cran comic for iPhone delivery first, and then thinking of web delivery second and iPad delivery third. I think that really kind of outlined my initial thoughts on this, but I'm beginning to think a little bit more deeply about this idea of, if you're a cartoonist who wants to reach young people, I'm beginning to suspect that getting it into an app of some sort is probably something. Let me try to find a way to say this that doesn't sound so definitive. But it also doesn't sound wimpy. I've just outlined the struggle of my life as I'm always trying to not sound definitive, but also not sound like I'm wishy-washy at the same time. I'm just beginning to think that might be the key to reaching young people. And yes, put the comic on the web too for those adults who want to discover and then maybe give it to their kids. So imagining a website with the comic on there, but clearly marked in the sidebars, download the iOS app and the Android app and get the comics pushed to your mobile device whenever you want. And then that brings up another problem of how to format this thing so it reads well on an iPad and an iPhone or an Android phone and a... something like a Slate or what is a Galaxy Tab or whatever those other Android tablet devices are. That presents a whole other problem that I don't think that apps have really successfully solved yet. But so we come back to development. And I'm going to make this claim now that I'm going to do some investigation into what are our development options outside of learning programming language. Because making a comic app doesn't seem like it requires that much programming. Maybe there's some kind of WYSIWYG, what you see, what you get solutions, some simpler solutions that can more elegantly solve this problem. But then it comes to another thing. It was like discoverability. How do we get this delivered to kids? This is some sort of like ad hoc market research that I've been doing just by virtue of being exposed to a lot of children in my classrooms. Is, again, word of mouth is huge. YouTube is huge. So now it gets me thinking that doing promotional videos of some sort, whether it's some kind of AirSats motion comic or some kind of maybe even making some kind of game. I just sent a message to Rob Stenzinger. I'm going to check to see if he got back to me because I just got a little buzz on my phone. Here it is. Let's look in my... my Twitter feed real quick because I just direct messaged me back. Boy, this is compelling radio, isn't it? Here we go. Corona SDK by Anska, A-N-S-C-A. Apparently, that's some kind of software solution. It's an expensive one, but it's some kind of software solution that also that is well-suited for game development as well. And Rob will correct me if I'm wrong. Feel free to correct me, Rob. But I'm also thinking about, if you're going to create comics for kids, it might be worthwhile to also investigate creating simple games to interact with. Now, let me explain what I mean by this, because I'm a comics guy. Comics come first, games come second to me. However, I have found success with the Sugar Cereals books when I go to conventions, and I have the Sugar Cereals Digest number one on my table. Now, that's a 120-page book or 90-page book, something like that, where it has three full stories from the Sugar Cereals anthology. And each story is followed by a fun and games page, which is something we used to have in comics all the time when we were for like comics aimed at young people, like, well, or like Highlights Magazine for that matter. A Hot Dog Magazine is another example from the 80s that I used to adore. So you read The Equalizers of the Divide, and then at the end, there's a matching game, you know, match the two characters who are alike. And then there's like a word search game or like a name that character game. Here's like the five character faces, match them to their name. Little games like that. Now, it's a simple thing, but kids went crazy for it. I remember hearing multiple times from kids as they're flipping through the book, Mom, this one has games. So it's creating another level to interact with the characters and the intellectual property. So I'm not talking about a first-person shooter or a three-dimensional Super Mario 64 kind of environment game, but maybe there's got to be some simple games you could make to go along with your comic. What I'm doing here is I'm in audio. I'm spitballing ideas that I may want to explore for Sugary Cereals and sharing this spitballing with you guys who make comics for young people who may want to think about exploring this new platform as a way to reach kids. Because I am, like I said, in my experience, kids don't browse the web looking for things. They're not going to Google searches. They get a site from a friend and they just go to that site. Like, for instance, when I was looking up the Pokemon characters with Natalia, she would name a character and I was going to Google, saying, well, let me just Google that character. She said, why are you going there? Go to Bulbapedia. She's got her resource. She doesn't care about Google anymore. I Google everything when I want to know something, but for her, it was direct. She had her sources. She just goes to that. With the kids who are always showing me these videos that they're all excited about, I ask them how they found out about it, and they said, oh, a friend sent me a YouTube link. And it's across the board. That's what I hear over and over again. So web browsing, link exchange, I think that stuff works for adults. I don't think it works for kids. So what I'm outlining here, again, I'm just throwing a bunch of, I'm whiteboarding a bunch of ideas to follow up and investigate. I'm going to be investigating what our options are in terms of developing simple apps. Maybe it's even worth going through a third party, but I do feel strongly that the key is not to have a lot of interface there. The key is to just have, you launch the app, the new comic appears. And if they want to go to a menu, there's a menu button someplace on there that's clear. But otherwise, let's not have a ton of buttons at the top of the page. Let's just have the comic fill the screen, whether it's your iPhone or your iPad app. I think that that's what the kids would get most excited about. And then obviously, how do you monetize this? Well, I think in-app purchases for something like making comics for kids is a little sinister, although probably there's a huge buck to be made there. I would probably feel a lot more comfortable putting in links to purchasing the print editions or some kind of, I don't even know. See, this is where you guys can come in and we can start brainstorming this together. Like, what kind of monetization schemes would you come up with for something like this? When I say scheme, I just mean method. I should have said monetization method. Whether it's some kind of in-app purchase to get the next chapter, I don't know about that. That seems weird. Buying the book, that seems clean. Or buying extra features, like stuff that is not necessary to enjoy the comic, but stuff that would enhance somebody's experience who really, really loves the comic. That might be worth thinking about. The one thing I would draw the line on is what happened with the Smurfs game, if anybody heard about this, where it's one of those Farmville type games where it's you're building a village with your Smurfs, and if you want to build it faster, you got to buy Smurf berries, in-app purchases. Now you can buy Smurf berries to speed up your production, or you can buy extra special houses. Oh, you can get Vanity Smurf's house for X amount of dollars, and then that will give you certain experience points advantages. Man, is that an effective method of running a business, but when you've got something with it that's clearly aimed at young people to interact with, ooh, I think you run the risk of really ticking some parents off, because I think that this situation is very analogous to what happened in the early 80s, where parents were a little ticked off that so many intellectual properties were made into cartoons based on toys, and they said, oh, these are just commercials to pick kids' pockets. You know, just to back up, and I got to do a Thunder Punch Daily about this too, is about my whole idea about the commercialization of intellectual properties throughout the 80s and 90s, because I don't think it was such an evil thing, because after all they were doing is making exciting stories, and if the kids wanted to buy the stuff, they could buy the stuff. We are consumers, and what we love, we will inevitably consume. That's a quote from Ron Friedman, who wrote G.I. Joe, and I agree with him 100%. I don't think it was a poisonous thing necessarily. I think it was a capitalistic thing, but some people think capitalism is poisonous. I'm looking at you, Kim Holm, but Kim, I think you'd agree with me that making money is a good thing. So anyway, I was kind of diving off of my point there, but the main thing is that I've got my eye of Sauron pointed right back at iOS and tablet apps once again. I'm going to begin investigating this thing because I think it's a really exciting. It's not just an exciting platform in and of itself anymore. I'm beginning to see evidence that this is the way that more and more young people are engaging with their content. And And when I saw how naturally they interact with it, it was really a clue to me that, okay, this is going to be the method of discovery. I was just talking with Jamie Gamble of Omniterium.net on the Twitters, and we were talking about this whole future generation of comics readers. And the trick is one of the major stumbling blocks was that the mainstream publishers, the big publishers, the direct market publishers, don't know how to reach kids. They don't know how to market to kids. They don't know how to get the... I went to Toys R Us last week, and they did have a comic section in Toys R Us, but it was a mess. It was just like a couple shelves of comics with the covers facing out, but there was like a couple hundred comics in there, and you had to like really rifle through, and it was in this weird out-of-the-way space. It wasn't in a clear, easy-to-find area of the store. So it really felt like it was an afterthought of the stocking of the store. So it's tough to find these kids, but more and more kids are finding this content online, but they're finding it through word of mouth, and they're finding it through, in my opinion, more kind of holistically curated kind of sites rather than just creating an RSS feed of their favorite webcomics. That's what grown-ups do. And if we want to reach young people, we have to look at how young people engage with their content. And that's what I'm seeing so far. So, okay, that was a mess, but that's what we call spitballing, everybody. Who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thanks so much for supporting us in this project. We really couldn't do it without you. And I'm going to be posting a video in the next couple days. I did a video of my entire process of working on one of my He-Man and the Masters of the Universe character reimaginings. I posted the physical drawing aspect of it on YouTube, which you can get to off of my Comics Are Great website. It's on Vimeo as well. You can watch that part, but then I also did the digital cleanup and digital prep because I've got a different method of coloring these than what I've shown in past videos, so I'll be sharing that with you soon. And then also, don't forget to check out the other awesome features on there. We just posted an Art and Story Supreme episode, an hour-long discussion. That's in the feed if you haven't seen it yet. And Mark's and Kevin's shows, Mark the Beast and High Adventure Daily. Always worth a listen. So thanks once again, everybody. I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody.
In today's story, you saw how the Widgets were fooled by Evelyn's disguise. They learned that bad things can be made to look good and why we should always be careful and question everything that doesn't seem right. But it works both ways, and that's why the saying you can't judge a book by its cover is so important. What it means is that appearances can be deceiving, and you shouldn't judge books or people by the way they look. It's what's inside that really counts.